Santa Lucia Pizza Game Day on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on the official home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290. Now, here's Drew, Richard, and Ezra.
Y'all ready for this?
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us online, good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. What are you guys already laughing about over here, the two of you?
Nothing, Drew.
Nothing? Okay. Good morning. My name is Drew Mandel. I'm the host of this fine program, joined in studio by my good friend Richard Pollock. And to his immediate right, Ezra Bieber is joining us this morning. Ezra Bieber, good morning.
Good morning. My brother Justin Bieber is going to be in the crowd tonight for the Carolina Hurricanes-Winnipeg Jets game. But, Drew, I'm very excited to be here. We're going to be spending, I believe, 9 to 12 hours together
today. It's definitely more. It's probably going to be closer to 13 or 14 hours together.
We have the Bombers at 2 and, yeah, and of course, the big game, Hurricanes and Jets at 6. So today's going to be an unbelievable day. 45,000 people watching, hopefully two wins.
I'm really most looking forward to the end of our friendship, which will probably come around 8 o'clock this evening. That's exciting to me.
Towards the second period, we'll kind of separate and never talk to each other again.
That works perfectly well for me. How about you, Richie?
Well, you know, if you don't like me on the station, then you might as well turn off the station. I'm going to be on a bit today.
Yeah.
I'm also, you guys are going to the game.
Yeah.
Hustle and Lawless do their pregame show for the Bomber game from 12 to 2. I'm hopping on with Dave Manuk from illegalcurve.com from 2 to 3, and then I'm going to be hopping out with Hustler a bit after that. So it should be a fun day. I'm not going to the Bomber game. I'm not as big of a Bomber fan as you guys are, but I'm certainly looking forward to tonight and seeing Eric Stahl and company in town.
Well, yeah. Richie, me and Drew started calling H&L is H&P. It's
Lawless is out. Gary's gone.
It's Hustler Pollock, the amount of time you're spending on there, but you're doing a good job, and obviously we just hope that you don't leave IC, because there's no IC without you. So.
No, exactly. Exactly. I know you're already trying to renegotiate your contract and everything with us, but...
Yep. More bagels.
More bagels. That's what you're demanding? More bagels?
No bagels.
More bagels.
No bagels.
More,
Richie,
more
don't
bagels.
Don't leave me. I'll fall apart even more so than I already am.
It's coming from the guy who's got a big picture of a steak on his t-shirt right now. So
I wish it was a real steak.
Well, Santa Lucia Pizza Game Day here on TSN 1290. So I believe, if I'm not mistaken, that they're bringing us pizza this early.
Drew, you had a pepperoni this morning, didn't you?
I could really go for some pizza. I got to say, I could have some pizza right now. I wouldn't argue.
I got to tell you, we're covered pretty well. We got Santa Lucia, the official game day sponsor of the Jets, and then Carbone, the official show day sponsor of Illegal Curve, so we could probably score two or three pizzas per weekend. It's pretty cool.
Exactly, a doubleheader of pizza. I can do that. I can do that indeed. Anyways, welcome to the program. We have a big show for you this morning. Coming up,
Gary just texted me back up. There's no P in H&L.
Very good. Big show coming up. Coming up in about half an hour time from the Rally News and Observer, the beat writer for the Carolina Hurricanes, Chip Alexander is going to join us. Chip covers the Hurricanes. Probably nobody knows the team as well as Chip does, so we're thrilled to welcome him to the program. Coming up at 9:45 in about 45 minutes' time, you know him from TSN. You know him from the NHL Network. He's Craig Button, former general manager of the Calgary Flames, so he's going to join us on the air, really doing a fabulous job breaking down some of the prospects and everything else going on in the game.
Yeah, and people are starting to familiarize themselves with now Yakupov, this huge prospect in the OHL, and people here who are getting a little bit down in the Jets, which we'll talk about throughout the show, it's early, but they're putting their sights towards arguably, the consensus top pick of the draft. And Craig has unveiled his top 10 for the draft moving forward. We'll ask him about that and a number of other things.
I know Drew has to introduce our last guest here, our third guest.
He doesn't have to.
But as far as I'm concerned, it feels like the 2011 NHL draft just ended, and we're already talking about who's going to get the first pick in the 2012 entry draft. So we're going to get into this, but it's way too early. It's going to be early, even if it's January, in my opinion. So
I agree. And people have to realize, can I just qualify this one thing? There's a lottery. So if you finish last overall, you still have, I think, a 28% chance of winning the first overall pick. So don't get too excited. I'm listening to the post-game show before you introduce our last guest, Drew.
Okay.
I'm listening to the post-game show on Thursday, driving home from the cheer where we watched the game. And this guy calls into Rick Robb. Rick Robb's doing a great job. This guy calls in and says, people have been raising their expectations about the Jets making the playoffs. Like the Illegal Curve show. I don't know who he's talking about.
Oh.
It's not Drew, and it's not me.
It's this guy right here.
I don't even think it's you, because I don't even think you actually think that.
Well,
You mean we got long distance hate on somebody else's show on the
network?
Yeah,
he threw us under the bus as if we were pumping up the Jets making the playoffs. It's like not the case at all.
Well, it's you can go back and you can read the website in July, or you can listen to our season preview show in September. And I was the only person that thought the Jets would make the playoffs. And
we immediately had you drug tested after you said that.
Right, and I passed.
No, so, I don't know about that.
part of the reason why I predicted the Jets would make the playoffs is to make it a little bit interesting and have a bit of a contrarian view. But there's a lot of optimism there. You know, I'm a lifelong Winnipegger, and there is a bit of optimism, and I'm supposed to be unbiased. But I don't think our show as a whole has raised any expectations. To be honest with you, I think there's the opposite. I don't think there's any media outlet in Winnipeg that has raised the expectations. Kevin Cheveldayoff, the Jets general manager, was on TSN Radio 1290 yesterday, I believe, talking about expectations and how everyone has to be patient. That nobody's raised expectations. Fans can have their own expectations. The Jets were not a playoff team last year. This year, they have to make up a significant gap. And as far as fans go out there, it's probably a good idea, Drew, to be even keeled, even if your expectations are they're going to be the worst team in the league. It just has to be like that with a team like this. When the Thrashers traded Ilya Kovalchuk, you could say that, you know, they started the rebuilding process. But to be honest with you, the Thrashers have never really been in a position where they weren't rebuilding, if you think about it. They haven't won a playoff game. They've always had a young team, and as far as I'm concerned, most people's expectations are for the Jets to be a competitive team every night but be out of the playoffs. I'm probably one of the rare people that actually predicted them to be in the playoffs, to be honest with you.
Some people were saying that they thought they'd have a shot or they'd get into the eighth spot. And again, guys, it's really early. I mean, they're, 1-4-1?
Yeah.
But at the same time, they haven't played. You know, Pavlovich was very, very good for the first half of the season last year. And that was probably the main reason why they were doing so well. Having said that, I mean, I would say that even last year, they certainly played a lot better than they have to start this season. They haven't played that well. And, you know, there may not be a lot of talent here, and there really isn't. And a lot of it's being exposed for maybe what it is under the microscope of a Canadian media market. Even so, they're not playing as well as they can be. And the biggest thing to me, and you still have to introduce a guest, and we have to get through the entire show, and we're going to break it down further, but this is the biggest thing to me. You can't teach skill. You know,
you can't teach top line skill.
You can't teach top line. You can't really teach skill. You can't teach the hockey sense aspect. And in my opinion, you can teach defense, and you can get a structure in place that makes you successful. And so far, that's not in place. Now, I don't expect Claude Noel, to be honest, to get something like that in place, new system for new coach, right away, 6 games through the season. If we're talking 30 games, 40 games through the season, and this team still has the poor defensive structure and the panic in its own zone that it does, then you start to raise questions. But right now, you know, everybody's going to live and die with each game, but you have to take a step back.
Our final guest in today's show.
We don't even need you here.
I'm out.
Yeah. Anyways, let's talk.
I'm out. See you guys later. Anyways, our final guest coming up at 11:30 this morning, Anthony Sanfilippo of the Delaware County Daily Times. He covers the Philadelphia Flyers. The Jets play the Flyers Thursday night, so we'll talk to him about what you can expect there.
Through the Flyers game, as you know, quickly, first game of a 7-game road trip. The Jets will be on the road for 2.5 weeks.
Yes.
And we're going to be,
we'll be meeting
in New York for 3 of those games.
That's
but
right. Oh, boy.
It's going to be fun to have Anthony Sanfilippo on. I think, his 11th time?
Something like that. Yeah. He's our most frequent guest on the program. That's for sure. Anyways, before we look forward to today and the Jets-Hurricanes game, let's look back at last night. And let's start with those Carolina Hurricanes, who actually are in the second half of a back-to-back road game trip right now.
Which you have to take advantage of, by
absolutely
the way.
You have to take advantage of that, and we'll talk about that in a little while. They played in St. Louis last night.
Good game.
Yeah, they were the short end of a 3-2 overtime loss to the St. Louis Blues. So, you know, the Hurricanes probably didn't get to Winnipeg till, I'm going to guess, 2 a.m.?
Probably, yeah.
And I'm not even sure if they have a game day skate. We haven't seen any reports
they're having.
Are they having a game day skate?
Yeah, 11:30 today at the MTS Center.
I'm surprised about that.
Not open to the public.
No, of course not. But you think that's going to be a tired team. Yeah, thank you. That's going to be a tired team the Jets are going to be facing
tonight. Well, I mean, if you were worried about that with the Jets, going to Ottawa.
You're playing on the road and then traveling and getting there the next morning.
A lot easier to get from Ottawa to from Toronto to Ottawa than it is from St. Louis to Winnipeg.
I do. I mean, let me ask you this.
I know. They're flying charters and everything
else. They're flying charters. The truth is, what, St. Louis to here is probably 2 hours.
Yeah, but
and Ottawa, Toronto is probably like 30 minutes.
Yeah.
So it's you're still boarding the plane. You're still getting on the plane.
It's not necessarily the time of airtime. It's the time in between games, and if you think about it, that's more of a big deal. I watched. I ended up watching 3 out of the 4 games last night. Carolina got out to the early lead. Brandon Sutter had a couple of points, and St. Louis is a team that I will go on the record and saying that I, without any optimism, I do believe they will be a playoff team. Very good game. The Carolina Hurricanes beat the Jets twice in the preseason, and it's even though the Hurricanes played the Blues last night and lost, I still think they're going to be an extremely tough draw for the Jets tonight.
Now they allowed 43 shots on net last night as the end, but that being said, it's believed, and it was announced earlier this week, that Brian Boucher is starting. It's Cam Ward in the second half of a back-to-back. They want to make the playoffs. They want to keep Cam Ward fresh, especially with traveling back-to-back, not playing at home back-to-back. Brian Boucher getting in the net. Brian Boucher, who actually played here in the preseason game, I believe, not very good. And one thing you're going to see, moving forward, the Jets are going to play a lot of backup goalies, guys.
That's what I mentioned that earlier in the week. Yeah. Exactly, because teams are going to look at the Jets as being not top flight competition, so it's a good opportunity for their backup to get in the game.
And to Richie's point, even though I'm very high on the Hurricanes because they're the type of team that I think made all the perfect moves, and we'll talk to Chip Alexander about it, Richie. Alexei Ponikarovsky, Thomas Caberle, Tim Brent. They made some really nice complimentary moves.
Yep.
But I agree. You look at the difference between Cam Ward and Brian Boucher. Cam Ward is a top five goalie in the league. Brian Boucher is arguably a bottom five goalie in the league. Nothing against Brian Boucher, but that's just the way it is. Yep. So that's a huge advantage. When you look at your average NHL game and you don't have a goalie like Cam Ward or Marc-Andre Fleury, that maybe that's not as much of a factor. So you have to think that the Jets are going to want to pepper some more shots on Boucher tonight and test him early.
We'll talk about that throughout the show. Let's look back, finish looking back at last night in the NHL. The Detroit Red Wings were, again, and they're not playing a good team last night in Columbus. Don't get me wrong.
Columbus is terrible.
They haven't won a game yet.
I know. But with Detroit, Detroit with the puck yesterday was masterful.
Yes.
It was artistic is really what it was.
Good word, Drew. Keep going.
Thank you.
As always.
As always. But even last night on their power play and everything else, it was just a dominating performance by the Red Wings last night. 5-2 victors over the Columbus Blue Jackets. Those Blue Jackets are a bad hockey team.
Yeah, you got to feel for Scott Arneil.
Yeah, I do.
He's got to be thinking... you never pass up an NHL job, but come on, he's got to be thinking one more year in Manitoba would have been a job with the NHL team likely here. And that Columbus job is, I'm not sure if he's long for it, unfortunately.
It's not his fault.
He's got a bad goalie, he's got a bad defense, and he's...
got a bad general manager.
Scott Housen is disappointed there, no doubt about it.
Yeah.
There's been a lot of bad decisions.
Yeah, that's just it. And then they go and they get the guy that they think is the perfect complement to Rick Nash and Jeff Carter, and he goes out and he fractures his foot.
I don't think he was, and I said that right from the outset, Drew. I never thought he was the perfect complement to Rick Nash. They're both shooters.
Yeah, he thought that he was the...
Just because two good players just because there's two talented players doesn't mean they're going to work well together. Chemistry is a hard thing to find.
And Richie, not only do you have Jeff Carter, you have James Wisniewski out.
James was...
Self-imposed.
Yeah, exactly.
And he's gave him one of the worst contracts in the history of hockey.
So we're worse than the contract Drew got from TSN Radio 1290.
No kidding.
All I wanted was pizza. I don't think that's that bad of a contract.
36 pizzas
in New Jersey, where we're going to be in I think 2 weeks tonight.
That's a scary thought.
Yes, I know.
In New Jersey, in 2 weeks tonight, San Jose beat the Devils 4-3.
Is it true that the local police in Newark have alerted the locals about me coming to New Jersey?
In fact, I think you've already been banned from New Jersey.
I think the deli police says you've done that.
Yeah, exactly.
I can't wait till we go to Stanny Fischler's deli and try a sandwich.
Yeah, I think you're all definitely banned from that deli. San Jose beat the Devils 4-3 in a shootout last night. Joe Thornton playing his 1,000th NHL game.
Yep. Watch that game too. The Devils were scored on late, I think with 35 seconds left.
Yeah.
Pavelski scored.
It was Pavelski with assist to Thornton and Klo.
Pavelski scored, and Couture interfered with Hedberg a little bit, and Hedberg was complaining because he thought that Couture had stepped on his stick and prevented him from moving, and then they showed it on the replay, and it wasn't a big deal. But San Jose, I think all of us here picked them to win the West, if not all of us. Me and Richie did for sure. Really good hockey team. They took the extra point in the shootout. But the Devils, even though I didn't expect much of them, they didn't look bad last year. They haven't looked that bad so far.
3-1-1.
Not the strongest team on defense. You've got Adam Larson playing a lot of minutes for an 18-year-old, and you know Parise is coming back from an injury. Jacob Josephson left yesterday's game with a clavicle injury. Yeah, so Zajac and Josephson.
Is it Jacob or Jakob?
Jakob. Might be Jakob.
Is it Jakob or Jacob?
It's probably Jakob.
I'm going to start calling you Jakob, Ezzy.
No problem.
Okay. Final game last night in Anaheim. The Dallas Stars continued their hot start to the season. They went into Anaheim and they beat the Ducks 3-1 on the back of Louis Erickson's three-point game. The reason I know that, of course, is because I drafted him. Dallas 6-1 to start the season.
Dallas, I think, is only surprising everyone except Richie. I'm
surprised too, Ez.
I know, but I know you're very high on Louis Erickson and Jamie Benn.
I love
and
those guys. Love
Jamie Benn's goal against the Blue Jackets last night was pure just determination.
Yeah, it was crazy.
Two nights ago, it was just pure determination and will. And, you know, another team that once again, it's six or seven games into the season. Let's not get too excited. But there's a lot of talent there. Ribeiro's always good. Kari Lehtinen is playing very well.
Their defense has been surprising, though, Ez. I mean, they're forwards. They have guys who can get in there and put up some points, no doubt about it. Morrow and Erickson and Ben and Ribeiro, as you mentioned, many of them. And they have some good complementary pieces, like, you know, with the likes of Steve Ottin, etc. But, you know, Lehtinen's been very good, and their defense has been stronger. And their new coach, Manitoba boy, I forget how to pronounce his last name always.
Gullitson?
Yeah, Gullitson, whatever.
Glenn Gullitson?
Yep.
Yeah, Gullitson?
Sounds like a Seinfeld character. But he's been... You know, he's got that team playing a different style. Remember one thing about Mark Crawford. I know we only want to go to break here.
Yes, we do.
Mark Crawford's a very offensive coach, sometimes loses a defensive structure on a team. And this is a classic move from the offensive coach to the defensive coach. You're clamping down a bit. You're playing a tighter game. It makes your defense and goaltending look better. And if you can transition well up the ice, which Dallas can because there's a lot of speed and skill, right? A lot of these guys aren't going to be guys who are pushing the puck in the corner the whole time. You know, a guy like Erickson, a guy like Ben, and a guy like Ribeiro can quickly move the puck up the ice and take advantage of that. And so it's an interesting mix the way he's put a new system into place, and so far they've succeeded.
Let's go to break on that. You're listening to Santa Lucia Pizza Game Day here on TSN 1290. When we come back, we're going to start looking at the Jets week in review and looking forward to tonight's Jets-Hurricanes matchup. You're listening to TSN 1290. 20 minutes past 9 o'clock. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment is brought to you by Carbone Coal-Fired Pizza, home of Canada's only coal-fired pizza oven. Taste the difference at Carbone Coal-Fired Pizza, 1580 Taylor Avenue, pizza baked, well done. You're listening to TSN 1290. This is Santa Lucia Pizza Game Day here on the station. The Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm Drew Mandel, joined by Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg.
Let us talk, Drew. Like...
I gotta go through my routine. You guys talk too much as is. Nobody wants to listen to either of you. They come to the show to listen to me. That's it. Don't ever forget that.
I'll tell you, we've been at the cheer for the first five home games. Four road games. And, you know, Drew's such an eloquent speaker. He goes up there and just
do the impression.
I can't do the impression on air. But, you know, Drew's done a fantastic... No, Richie's trying to get me going here, and I'm not going to do it.
Richie, don't start, because Ezzy and I have to spend a lot of hours together today, and it's going to be awkward if we're already not talking
by about 9:30 in the morning. I'll whip out my Drew impression in the press box tonight.
No, that's not even the place where you should be doing that either. How about you just not do any Drew impressions? Can you handle that?
Hustler did a Drew impression.
Yeah, Hustler did a Drew impression yesterday.
Where was I?
No, it's that Thursday. You had a Drew impression between commercials. Hustler's now doing Drew impressions.
Well, we've reached a new low is obviously what that boils down to. Anyways, let's look back at the Jets' first win of the year.
Okay.
Only win of the year so far. It happened last Monday against the Pittsburgh Penguins. You know, you look at that game, and Richie, you were at that game as a fan, so you had sort of a different vantage point than the rest of us.
Sure.
You know, what did you see there as being the reason for the Jets' success, and besides Malkin and Crosby not being in the lineup?
You know, there is an element of luck, Drew, that we have to account for, and that's Paul Martin falling down at the blue line on the first play of the game. The Jets clearly were nervous. I think the fans were nervous. I think the team was nervous. Paul Martin falls down. They take advantage of it on a 3-on-1, and Kyle Wellwood scores. It eases the tension. I think the other difference, and the biggest difference was, and I think that overall the game, they outplayed them, but it wasn't by as substantial a margin as some have made it out to be. Their forecheck was a lot better, and they were controlling the puck along the boards. That's something they generally don't do, something they didn't really do in Ottawa. A lot of their, as I said it before on the show, a lot of their offense is off the rush. In that game, they were controlling the puck down low. They were eating into possession time. They were making Pittsburgh defend. And to be honest, guys, with the way the team is constructed with an offensive defense court, if you can get the puck deep and make guys move around in defensive coverage, you can take advantage of your offensive defensemen either sneaking in or they're good shots from the point. And I thought they did a very good job, you know, even on the second goal when Vermeistrov was making some moves, he hit glass coming off of a change with a slap shot. But the defensive coverage was a little mixed up. There was a change. There was pressure down low. He pushed Letang off the puck. He moved, and he made guys cover. That kind of stuff, they need to be able to sustain more, you know, in-zone time on the in the offensive zone. And I thought in that game, to date, that's been their best game in terms of sustained pressure.
Richie, I don't think that game was that. The score of that game was indicative of how the game actually rolled out.
Really?
I think it could have. I'm not saying this. It should have been 6-1, but there was a couple of opportunities where I think the Jets could have gone ahead. But I think what happened in that game was the blueprint for how the Jets have to win. You score early, you establish a good forecheck, you get the puck quick out of your zone,
and then you hold on for dear life.
Yeah, well, you limit turnovers. You stay out of the penalty box as much as you can, and you get unbelievable goaltending. That was Pavlik's best game, aside from maybe, I thought he was very strong in the Toronto game as well, but he was very good in that game. So, you know, even though, Richie, we might disagree about, you know, should the Jets have only won by one, or should it have been closer? The fact is they did play their best game, and they limited the mistakes they've made in I would say, four out of six games. They've had, in that Ottawa game on Thursday night, they were running around in their zone, and they should have lost 4-1. I know people are saying, the Jets scored the first goal, and they outshot the Senators 36-30. I think that the Jets have not looked like a cohesive unit in more than two out of the six games. I think that they've been sloppy in their own end four out of the six games, and the two games that I'm talking about, by the way, are obviously the win against Pittsburgh and the shootout loss against Toronto. As far as I'm concerned, the team is not playing well, and people are. And I realize that, you know, we don't necessarily have the offensive talent, enough offensive talent to take the next step and get into the playoffs. But I just want to see the team play well together. I'm talking about, you know, breaking out of your zone and consistently getting a cycle going and having a power play that
is. Let me ask these questions. You talk about breaking out of your own zone. Ron Hainsey's out for a couple weeks. Yep. What does that loss do to the defensive side of the game for the Jets?
It affects the team more than some people will realize. I mean, in the game that he went out, he was paired with Johnny Oduya. He makes Oduya look better. He moves the puck really well up the ice. He's a very good skater. Not the best in his defensive zone, but he's an upgrade over Derek Meech. And he, you know, that is a significant loss. And somebody's going to have to eat those minutes.
And Enstrom played half the game the last two nights.
And that's what happened. Meech eats the spot in the lineup, but on the special teams role and other stuff like that, and some more even strength minutes, because Ron Hainsey would play, you know, more like 18 around there, if not higher, like Chicago, and then Meech will play 12 to 13. So there's minutes to be accounted for. And, you know, again, Drew, the Enstrom ice time, we can talk about that for a second here. You can't play a smaller defenseman, in my opinion. You can't play a smaller defenseman 31 minutes. I know there's an overtime to account for, but 31 minutes on the first half of a back-to-back night, and I think he played something like
29 and a half.
Next night?
Yeah.
I mean, you want to wear him down back-to-back nights like that? I just don't think, and don't get me wrong, I realize and I'm happy that Claude Noel has picked up on the fact that I think Enstrom is his best defenseman.
Yeah.
Arguably the team's best player. But you can't, you know, games 65 and 66, if he's playing that often, and especially on back-to-back nights, unless you're sitting him a significant amount of power play time, you're going to wear him down.
Is he as small as he looks, or is he just that small standing next to playing with Bufflin?
He's as small as he looks.
5'10", right?
Yeah, he's as small as he looks, Drew. The smartest player on the team, I think. I don't think there's any question about that. He reads the game as well as anybody. He's very shifty. We talked about it before. His weakness is when he loses position because he's not big enough to push guys up the puck and he doesn't have a long reach. So that sometimes is his downfall. But overall, he moves the... I mean, if people talk... You know, Bufflin has played better than he did at the beginning of the season. I think that can be said. Now, you can take issues with certain things he does, but he's played better than he did at the beginning of the season.
He's a freelancer.
There's a reason for that.
Yeah.
First three games of the season, two he played with Oduya. We don't know why yet. And the third he played with Randy Jones. I don't know why he did that one. I don't know why those decisions were made.
You have to play Dustin Bufflin with a guy that has better foot speed than he has.
Right.
You just have to.
Yeah. And you have to deal with a guy who's able to get him the puck and take advantage of his skill level.
Also, Enstrom and they're comfortable playing together. They played together last year for the bulk of the season in Atlanta.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, Enstrom probably at this point in time knows when Bufflin's going to make one of his charges towards the net and pinch deep. Yeah.
On the topic of, I think we're expecting Hainsey to be out 1 to 2 weeks, right?
That's what's been reported.
I have changed my opinion. I think before he went out, he was playing as our second best defenseman, and aside from Enstrom.
You certainly are good, Hainsey. Yeah.
Hainsey's had trouble in his career, and he's had trouble in Atlanta, and he's had even dating back to Montreal, who I believe he was drafted by. He's had trouble being the type of guy that gets overcommits on defense and pinches, but he's improved. He's older now, and he's one of those guys they need there. And this Jets defense, I mean... I think it goes back to what Richie was alluding to earlier. The Jets defense, there's a lot of offensive defensemen.
Mm-hmm.
Johnny Oduya is not a stay-at-home defenseman. He's a guy, and I've noticed this, and I don't want to pick on Johnny Oduya, Drew, but he's been terrible.
He's making it easy to pick on him right now.
He's been awful, and I apologize, but he's just not getting it done. He's coughing up the puck. He's out of position, and...
It's not so much that he's even coughing up the puck. If he was getting pressured, it's his terrible decisions. Like that decision against Ottawa. I mean, at what point in your hockey career are you told don't make a pass right up the middle of the ice?
It wasn't only that, Drew. I think it was the method of the pass. I mean, that's one issue, obviously, up the middle. But, you'll see up the middle passes all the time in regroups like that was. But
it was a long distance up the middle
not
pass.
Not even that, Drew.
Cross ice.
It was a flop pass. It was, he kind of pushed the puck up, in terms of trying to saucer it up the ice, but didn't do it hard. And this is the thing. You have to know not only where you're going to, but the surroundings. I mean, if you're passing the puck up the middle and Zenon Konopka's up there, NHL players are great, but he might not knock it down. You got Daniel Alfredson in the middle of the ice, and you're giving him a soft saucer pass up the middle. Not only can he knock it down, but if he does knock it down, a guy like Konopka can't do anything with it. A guy like Alfredson transitions, goes boom, right around you and scores. And that's exactly what happened.
Yeah.
You have to know your surroundings. Never mind the fact that Claude Noel probably never wants Oduya up out against Daniel Alfredson, but if Oduya is and wants to seek more responsibility, he has to make better decisions.
It's amazing that this is the same guy. Like, as you spoke about how his flaws were hid on New Jersey, it's amazing that this is the same guy that the Thrashers wanted for Ilya Kovalchuk.
Well, Drew, they got him, they got Cormier.
They got the first rounder.
And they got Bergfors. So, he hasn't been very good. Bergfors is already gone. The first rounder is... Who was the first rounder?
We'll have to look that up.
Yeah, I think it was the end of the first... I don't know. Or they might have traded. I'll check into that.
Okay.
Drew, before we go to break, we got an email from a listener.
Yeah,
when you guys get to New Jersey, buy Snooki a drink from all the hockey fans in Winnipeg.
I think we'll leave that to you to do there, Ezzy. We'll call you... You'll be... I don't know. Eoki? Yeah, I can go for some Nooki. Anyways,
what about a Wookiee?
Yeah, exactly. Let's go to break. When we come back, more on the other side. This is Santa Lucia Pizza Game Day. You're listening to Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This is TSN 1290, Santa Lucia Pizza Game Day. The previous segment was brought to you by Carbone Coal-Fired Pizza, 1580 Taylor Avenue, pizza baked, well done. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
And let's welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show from the Rally News and Observer, Chip Alexander. Chip, good morning. Welcome to Winnipeg.
Hey, thanks a lot.
What time did you guys get in? A late night flight from St. Louis?
Well, the overtime game in St. Louis pushed everything back a little bit, which that I guess the arrival of the hotel was about 2 o'clock last night, and kind of interesting, there were still people out there with memorabilia wanting autographs, so I guess some people never rest that way. But, yeah, made for a late night, and, you know, obviously a little bit of an early start tonight with the game, so it'll be interesting to see how the Canes respond to that.
They're still planning a game day skate?
I think they call that off today. I mean, it was a pretty physical game last night. There were some bumps and bruises coming out of that. And Paul Maurice typically does not like to skate in the back end of a back-to-back. So it's probably more important for the Canes to get, you know, the fluids in them today and rest up a little bit and get ready for tonight.
Very good. Let's start off with the Hurricanes. You know, pretty much any conversation about this team begins now with Jeff Skinner. Are you surprised that he's continued his Calder-winning season from last year?
Well, not really. I mean, if you watch Jeff Skinner over the course of the season last year, and he played every game, and just the way he works at it, and the way he goes about it, and he's off to a pretty good start, obviously. But certainly there are other players in the lineup like Brandon Sutter who may be playing a little bit better than Jeff is, and playing better than an Eric Staal. And obviously, the best player in the lineup so far has probably been Cam Ward. I know he was the loser last night, but faced 43 shots and has played. You know, he was an all-star last year and is showing kind of all-star form early this year. But I don't think anything that Jeff Skinner does will surprise too many people anymore.
Are we expecting, Chip, are we expecting Brian Boucher net tonight?
That's my hunch. From everything Paul Maurice has said, he said even after the game last night that decision hadn't been made. It may not be made until this morning. Cam Ward likes to play the second half of back-to-backs. He enjoys that. He thrives on it. But Brian Boucher played here in the preseason exhibition game and has a feel for the rink. And if I had to bet, I would think that probably Brian Boucher would be in net.
In terms of off-season acquisitions, Chip, you know, two of the more significant ones to the Canes this summer were Thomas Caberle and Alex Ponikarowski. Can you kind of talk a bit about how they've played thus far?
Well, I think both of them have really tried to find their place in the lineup. And, you know, Alex Ponikarowski started out on Eric Staal's line. He was moved around a bit, and he's back with Eric Staal now. And Thomas Caberle started off with Justin Falk, who was a 19-year-old rookie trying to play his way into the league and played the first three games. And that was new to have a rookie with him in his pairing. And is now with Jay Harrison, who's more of a seasoned defenseman. And, you know, Thomas Caberle has really had an impact on the power play. It looks a lot smoother than it did last year, and obviously that was one of the reasons that he was brought in. And he has a friend on the team too, and Yuri Talusti, who played with him in Toronto, and is a good friend from back in the Czech Republic. So I think both of them have taken a little bit through training camp and early in the season to kind of really get comfortable with where they are on the team. But I think it's really coming on now, and both of them, I think, are finding their niche.
Chip, Eric Staal, basically knocked his brother Mark Staal of the New York Rangers out with a concussion. How's he dealing with his brother, you know, basically being on the sidelines dealing with post-concussion syndrome?
I asked Eric about that a few weeks ago when the news reports came out of New York that Mark would not go to Europe with the team. And you're right, it has worn on him. If you know how tightly knit that those brothers are with Jordan and Mark and Eric, you know that, the ties are so close, and these guys like each other, love each other so much, that to have one brother like that who is still dealing with this and did all summer, and Eric said that, you know, there would be times when Mark seemed like he was fine and thought that all these symptoms were gone, and then, you know, a week later he's dealing with them again, so it's hard to go into a season with something like that hanging over your head and with somebody that you really care about. And I think as soon as Mark gets back and starts playing again, then, you know, I think it'll propel Eric to start playing better as well. And I think you've seen it a little bit in his play. I know he tries to put it out of his mind when he gets on the ice, but it's hard to do when you're that close.
You're listening to Santa Lucia Pizza Game Day on TSN 1290. We're joined by Chip Alexander of the Rally News and Observer. Chip, looking at this year's team versus last year's team, you know, in terms of on-ice performance, what's been the difference so far?
I think it's been on the back end, and I think part of it, though, a big part of it, is bringing in Dave Lewis to work with the defensemen. I think he's done a really good job dealing with them and teaching them, and they've been better with their gap control, all the little things you hear about better defensive play. They're pretty physical. It was, like I say, they had to to get the right pairings together. And I think with Tim Gleason playing with Brian Allen, they've been an effective kind of shutdown tandem. And you go from there on down the line. And obviously there was a little bit of a feeling out process with Justin Falk on the back end. And, you know, offensively they're pretty much the same in terms of the forward lines, a couple of new faces. But, with Cam Ward and goal, it all starts there and you work your way out. And they've just been, they're not a team that's going to overwhelm you probably when you see them play. The one aspect that you usually pick out is to say they're a pretty hard-working team and a little more physical team than probably people may think they are. So it's just a pretty solid team overall. There are not a lot of big stars on this team, but it's the kind of team that should be in the mix for a playoff spot.
Chip, it seems like Jim Rutherford over the past couple of seasons has put an emphasis on drafting and acquiring puck-moving defensemen. Can you speak about that and whether or not that's the case?
I think that has been the case. And, you know, there have been some players like an Ian White who come in, and that was supposed to be his role, and I don't think they were quite pleased with what they saw there and certainly moved him out. So you bring in a Caberle. I mean, I think most people wondered where he would land, and I think maybe a lot of people thought he would re-sign with Boston. They drafted Jamie McBain, who's another puck mover, and he's played pretty well for him. Justin Falk is maybe a combination of the two, a second-round draft pick. So I think they really look for that kind of player. I think maybe Jim Rutherford feels like they have more value. You can always find maybe one of the big, stay-at-home types that you can pick up. But in terms of the draft, I think you're right. They have looked for the puck movers. And, of course, the guy who's played the best for them this year is a puck mover in Joni Pikkanen, who had a point streak in last night, but has really played some of the best hockey that he has since Carolina acquired him a few years ago.
You know, Chip, we asked you about the acquisitions of Alexei Ponikarovsky and Thomas Caberle, but, Tim Brent has been a pretty good acquisition, too. How important has the addition of Tim Brent been for the Canes' penalty kill?
It's been big. I mean, Tim is a very good penalty killer, as you said. They really thought, bringing him in it would add another strong face-off man as well. And I know that Tim has said that he feels like he really needs to have some improvement in that area. He hasn't been as strong there as he has been in the past. But that line that they put together, they kind of went back and forth a little bit. But now with Anthony Stewart down there on that line, they've got a little offensive touch to them. I mean, they've scored some goals. So, but Tim Brent is a young guy with a little bit of experience, and he fits well in the room, and that's always been important to Jim Rutherford when he brings somebody in, is to try to find a player who's going to be an easy fit for him. So I think in the course of the season, Tim Brandt's going to be a pretty big pickup for him.
Chip, final question here. You just mentioned him, Anthony Stewart. He was somewhat surprisingly let go by the Jets and not qualified. How has he played thus far, and what was the appeal of to Jim Rutherford when he gave him the 2-year deal?
I think they just thought with Anthony that his upside was was pretty significant and worth the money that they gave him. And I think in talking to Anthony, I'm sure maybe some guys here have talked to him about it. But he was pretty shocked the fact that he was not given a qualifying offer by the Jets. And he's never been a big scorer in his career, but he's got the big body he can move. And certainly in the game last night with his brother Chris in the game, he was flying around the ice pretty good as well, and he can be. He's got some offensive skills. I know he had a big first half of the season last year down with the then Thrashers, but I just think that they feel like his potential is such that it was worth taking a flyer on him. And if it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out. There's not that much money tied up in it, but I kind of anticipate Anthony having a pretty strong game tonight, too. I think he has maybe something to prove to the management here.
I think that was revenge is always a dish best served cold. Is that what they say?
Cold. Yep.
Yeah. Hey, Chip Alexander of the Rally News and Observer, thanks for joining us this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Enjoy the game today.
Well, I hope so, and I hope that it didn't sound like I had too many cobwebs in my head, but it was a pretty late night last night. So I think everybody's anticipating here in preseason and wondering what the atmosphere will be like tonight, whether it can top that, and I think everybody's expecting that.
I think it will. If the other home games have been any example, it should be a raucous environment. Thanks for joining us this early. We'll let you get back to bed now.
Okay, thanks a lot, guys.
Thanks, Chip. There you go. Let's head to break. That was Chip Alexander of the Rally News and Observer. You're listening to Santa Lucia Pizza Game Day on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This is TSN 1290. welcome back to the show. We just heard from Chip Alexander of the Rally News and Observer. You're listening to TSN 1290. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm Drew Mindell, joined by Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
And let's welcome back to the program from TSN and the NHL Network. Craig Button is joining us. Good morning. How are you?
I am good. Good morning to you guys, too. How's the weather there in Winnipeg?
It's actually not too bad. It's about...
-20.
Yeah. Yeah, you can trick a lot of people. That's not going to work with me, though.
Well, I hope it warms up a little bit. We have to go sit outside at the Bomber game before the Jets game tonight. So, you know, hopefully the weather won't be too bad this afternoon.
Okay, good.
Yeah. Craig, we want to start with really you've been writing about prospects on TSN.ca lately, and we have to start with Nile Yakupov. You know, how good is he? What is his ceiling?
Well, he's really good player, and, you know, he was a top player last year as an underage. And, you know, you think about players coming over from Russia, stepping into a real demanding league like the Canadian Hockey League and on the Ontario Hockey League specifically. You know, that's not an easy task. But when you start to look at a player like Nail, what you start to see is just all those high-end qualities in abundance. And I don't care if it's skating, puck handling, thinking, you know, performing at the key times of the game. I mean, Nail does all of that. And, you know, what he's done this year in the absence of his centerman, Alex Galchenyuk, another top prospect for the draft coming up, is just, you know, sensational. And I would say now, guys, that the way he's played and the fact that Galchenyuk hasn't been there, that the gap between one and the rest of the guys is widening.
That's interesting, Craig. You know, Craig, one thing I've realized, too, looking at your rankings, and maybe you can correct me if I'm wrong, it seems as though, you know, there's a lot of guys who are 5'10", 5'11", around 6 feet. A lot of smaller guys seem to have moved up the charts. Is that a product of the NHL game these days with, you know, with more calling of the clutching and grabbing and more room for skating? Has the NHL transformed a bit in terms of the draft?
Well, I don't think it's just about size. I think it's about players that possess those high-end skills. And if you're an excellent skater and you're an excellent thinker and you got real good puck skills, I think that those translate so well now into the NHL. And, you know, those skills are being developed at the younger ages. And, you know, I think there's a lot of cycles that go through when we see players like that. I can tell you guys this, next year's draft, that you're going to see a plethora of 6'4" and taller defensemen. Okay. Because that's the 95 group. I mean, Team Alberta last year at the Canada Games had four defensemen.
Wow.
That were 6'4" and over.
Wow.
And they're all really good NHL prospects. So I think, you know, we take a snapshot of this year's draft and say 6 foot or 5'11". That's just this group. Next year's group's going to be a big group. And you can only deal with the group you have. Mm-hmm. What I will tell you is that these players all have the skills that you see in the NHL. Quickness, skating, thinking, ability to make plays with the puck. And I think that's been the real trickle down of what's happened since the lockout, is that these players now are developing these skills, and we're seeing more of it from a wide range of players. And you're going to see it from the bigger players too, because you see those guys not lumbering around, because they know how important it is to have those skills.
Craig, you mentioned that there might be a significant drop-off from Yakupov and maybe the second slot, which right now you have Philip Forsberg at. Is that where the significant drop-off is going to be in the top 10, or is there even going to be a second drop-off within your top 10?
Well, you know, I think there's two areas, and I'm really not trying to dismiss Forsberg or Matt Dumba or Galchenyuk, a top group of players. It's just that Nail Yakupov, without Galchenyuk, you know, a leading scorer in the OHL on a team that, you know, doesn't have, you know, players that are as good as Nail, you know, and the opposition is really able to focus in on him, he hasn't been deterred. And I think that that's why I make the point that, you know, he's not doing anything to dispel the notion that he's the number one pick in this year's draft. That being said, I think that you go now to, you know, the the WHL, the Fab Five defense. That's Matt Dumba, Morgan Rielly, Ryan Murray, Griffin Reinhardt, and Derek Pouliot. And, you know, you look at those five defensemen who I all think are top 10 ranked or top 10 rated players. They're all different. They all possess different skills. And I think that, you know, somebody might say Derek Pouliot's better than Matt Dumba or vice versa. Mm-hmm. And I don't think there's a lot of disparity between their skills, per se. I think they're different types and different flavors, and depending on what you may be looking for, I think that that's where you might get a disparity between those five guys. Somebody might have one guy six, one guy might have another guy eight, but to me, those five defensemen are all defensemen. They're going to have long careers in the National Hockey League, and depending on what type of player you want, you're going to have a choice.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. This is Santa Lucia Pizza Game Day, and we're joined by Craig Button of TSN and the NHL Network. Craig, you know, from afar, from your lofty seat to TSN studios, what have you seen so far about the Winnipeg Jets?
Well, you know, I think the first few games, they were overwhelmed. And why? And I think there's probably a lot of reasons they were overwhelmed. You know, it's new, a lot of excitement. The first game in Winnipeg, you know, there was the excitement building up to that game was unbelievable. I mean, you lived it, you partook in it, but the feeling was right across the country, and you know there was you know the joy, the excitement around, and that trickles down to the players, and certainly you know I think it showed up in their play. And you know, I think that, they got on the road. I thought they played a really good game in Toronto. They weren't able to close it out. But, and let me just rewind. They were able to win, you know, coming home after not playing very well and beating the Pittsburgh Penguins and then going into Toronto. I think what you're going to see from this team is more development. I think Claude Noel is a really good coach. You know, it's a big change for them moving from Craig Ramsey and his style to what Claude Noel is doing now. But, you know, they're going to be competitive, and that's all you can ask for. You know, one of the things that I think you see with the Winnipeg Jets is that you're going to see Bermistroff, you're going to see Kane, you're going to see Little, you've seen Scheifele play a lot. But these are players that are young and relatively inexperienced. And when you start playing against better teams, you know, that inexperience is going to be exposed. And I think that that's just a natural part of the growing process for these players. And I know Kevin Cheveldayoff understands that and recognizes that. But I think it starts with a case of being able to compete and dig in as a team to be successful. And I think they've started to show that. And, you know, as they grow as a group and some of their younger players gain that experience, they're going to improve as a team. But right now, you know, they're still a team that's, trying to find their way. And, you know, they're a team that's going to have to scratch and claw to be in any type of a playoff hunt.
Craig, you mentioned Mark Scheifele. And I have the group of, you know, Mark Scheifele, Mika Zibanejad, and Sean Couturier. Do you think any of them will stick with the big clubs?
I think Sean Couturier, based on where he's at in Philadelphia, will stay. I mean, you got to keep in mind, too, that some of these players are very different, even though they're in the same draft here. Sean Couturier has 3 years of junior hockey under his belt. Mark Scheifele has one.
Right.
You know, Mika Zibanejad has played in the Swedish Elite League against pros, against men. And you know, that gives him a little bit more of an advantage. And he gets to play behind Jason Spezza. You know, for Mark Scheifele, that center ice position is a gaping hole for the Winnipeg Jets right now. And, you know, you can't protect or hide Mark Scheifele behind some better players right now. So, you know, when he gets playing, you know, it's harder for him to, harder for Claude Noel to get favorable matchups where Mark Scheifele's experience level can handle it. But, you know, I think that, you know, Zibanejad will be an interesting case to see what happens with him. But, you know, Couturier and Landeskog, I definitely see them staying with their team, as Ryan Nugent-Hopkins as well. I don't see them going anywhere at this point in time.
Craig, you know, you mentioned the comparison between Couturier and Scheifele has been made in Winnipeg quite a bit because of the Jets selecting Scheifele one pick before Couturier, and Couturier maybe being the consensus pick there. How would you compare the two, and how would you project the two?
Well, I think that Mark Scheifele is probably more characteristic of a dynamic, offensively weighted centerman, and he's quick, he's fast. I think everybody in Winnipeg has seen that. He's a guy that is going to attack defenses and going to put people on their heels. And I think that Mark really fits into that real good, two-way second line. Can he evolve into a first-line center? Yeah, he could. But I see him as that real good two-way center that's going to put up those 70 to 75 points at the very least.
Craig, I'm sure you've heard the scuttlebutt about...
I want to hear Couturier.
Oh, sorry. Sorry to cut you off,
yeah,
Craig.
Yeah, no problem. And then quickly on Couturier, I see him more as a Jordan Staal type. That real good third-line center. He's going to chip in with points. He's going to be a real good penalty killer, good on face-offs, add size. And, both types of those players are real valuable, but they're different. So I know they go 7 and 8, but I think they're different types of players.
Yeah, Craig, sorry about that to cut you off.
No problem.
I was so excited to ask this question that I couldn't handle it. I'm sure you've heard I shouldn't mention that these are only rumors that the Calgary Flames are looking to move Rene Bourque. What do you think of Rene Bourque as a talent, and do you think there's anything to believe in, those rumors?
Well, I mean, rumors start usually with something that's tangible, and where they go, is what we all start to watch for. What creates all the interest, and we love that. We need that. It's necessary. As for Rene Bourque, I mean, he's a guy that when he's playing really well, he skates. He's got a ruggedness to his game. He's got size. He's a guy that can kill penalties and play in a lot of multiple situations in the game. What he is incredibly inconsistent. I mean, you get these stretches of really good play where you go, I want that player. And then you get these stretches of indifferent play and unproductive play where you start to wonder, like, geez, do we really want that player? So, I don't think that's going to change with Rennie. I think that players like him, it comes down to an acceptance of what he is. I think for the Calgary Flames, certainly last year, I don't know if you can start to say it this year, but I think there was expectations that he would be more of a frontline player for them. I don't see him as a frontline player. I see him as a good, solid player that if your team is functioning really good and your frontline players are carrying a lot of the play and doing what they need to do, then Rennie becomes a really good player in your group and a player that you can tolerate some of the inconsistencies with. But if you're asking Rennie to be that frontline player and that guy and you don't understand that there's going to be some inconsistencies, you're going to be always disappointed in him. So I think it really comes down to an acceptance of what Rene Bourque is instead of trying to think there's always something more there.
Craig, we'll let you go on this one final question. If you were the Vancouver Canucks, would you be looking to trade Roberto Luongo? And if you were an opposing general manager, would you take that trade knowing the contract that comes along with it?
Yeah, you know the contract is what it is, and I'm not trying to just use that throwaway line. The bottom line is cap hit is 5.6. Significant money has already been paid out in the first 2 years of that. I mean, if you're looking for a goaltender who statistically in the league has been in the top categories, I mean, Roberto is a guy that can stabilize your goaltending, and you have to consider that. I'm not so sure that you're just because you hit a rough patch that you should be looking to trade Roberto Luongo. What I will say about this is these two things. Number one is I'd like to see somebody stand up and back Roberto Luongo, and I'm talking about management, specifically of the coach. Again, I used this. I said Bob Gainey did it with Ed Belfour. He's a member of the Vancouver Canucks, and, he's theirs. And, get behind them and tell the fans to back off. Secondly, I wouldn't be so quick to consider trading Corey Schneider because I think as the friction continues to build, there may be no other way out than to consider trading Roberto Luongo, but that wouldn't be my first option. But again, I wouldn't be looking to trade Corey Schneider either.
Craig Button of TSN, thanks very much for joining us this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks, Craig. Take care.
Thanks a lot, Craig.
Yeah, you too.
You're listening to Santa Lucia Pizza Game Day on TSN 1290. Let's go to commercial break. 1 hour down, 2 hours to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. In case you missed any of the program so far, we were joined by Chip Alexander of the Rally News and Observer. We were also joined by Craig Button of TSN. In case you missed any of that and want to download it, it will be available for iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, subscribe, and get it sent to your iPod each and every week.
You know, Drew, you're... Hold on.
I'm doing something right now. You hang on.
What are you doing?
I'm doing a promo for one of our sponsors.
Okay, that's important. Okay. They're paying for my rent right now.
Exactly. This your rent of your basement in your father's house. So
yes.
This segment is brought to you by the Cheer Bar and Grill, located in the heart of Osborne Village at Stradbrook and Osborne. Catch all the home team's games on their numerous HD big screens. Be sure to join Illegal Curve Hockey for their weekly appearances at the Cheer Bar and Grill. Ezra Ginsberg.
You know, Drew, the Cheer has been fantastic. We've been there, I think, 4 times now, and we had lots of fun. Me and Drew, after the loss to the Senators, we, aside from drowning our sorrows in Budweiser beer, decided to have a bit of a shuffleboard match. They have a shuffleboard table there. And let me tell you, we couldn't keep one single rock on that table. But it's awesome. You got to come and join us.
Drew is 65 years old. He's been playing shuffleboard for a good 20 years. The irony of that is I think it improved my curling a lot. I curled a lot better than normal yesterday.
It was an oversalted shuffleboard, though.
Yeah. If we had to have played to 3 points, we would still be there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we would have slept there.
What time is dinner at the retirement home?
4:30. 4:30, and then I go for my ice cream dessert at about 7.
We have very, very, very even odds that Drew's dad's going to outlast him each night on the bachelor party trip.
Really? Is that what we were predicting?
Well, your dad's far crazier than you are.
Well, Sheldon, I expect Sheldon's hitting at least some of the after-hours clubs.
For sure.
A little MDMA won't do him okay.
The Facebook and Twitter albums from that trip are going to be legendary. The Hangover 3. Let's
go. Do you have a Twitter album?
Well, you can
the
have...
Hangover 3.
I did invite Mike Tyson. I knew there was a reason for that.
You know, when you go to Long Island, Newark, and Manhattan and watch 3 Jets games in New York, there's a chance that a tiger might end up in a hotel room. That's all I'm going to say.
Do you remember that guy in Ohio who had like...
Wow, that was, I mean, as ridiculous as that story was, it was actually tragic. I mean, all these are some of the most exotic animals
Drew,
in the world.
This isn't a political show, Drew.
No, this isn't,
it's not
this
a political show, but anytime you only have 1,800 tigers in the world and 18 of them get killed at one time, that's tragic as far as I'm concerned.
How did 18 of the 1,800 tigers get into this guy's like farm?
Apparently, Ohio has the laxest like exotic animal laws in the United States, and apparently you can buy tigers now.
Well, I mean, Drew has a parrot in his apartment, so...
Didn't Mike Tyson own a Siberian tiger?
Yes, but...
Yeah, we're not going to get into the... I mean, to the eccentricities of Mike Tyson.
Can you talk to your parrot like by yourself? Like, what do you guys talk about?
I don't have a parrot.
Drew talks politics with his parrot.
Can we talk about the Jets-Canes game?
Sure.
Okay. What is... Sure. Yeah, like, sure, why not? Yeah, it's a hockey show. We might as well do that. You know, what jumps out at you today is going to be the... I mean, the Canes are a tired team. We heard from Chip Alexander.
Yes.
Said they didn't get into the city until about 2 o'clock into the hotel room until, you know, somewhere between 2-3 a.m. This is a team that is going to... You would expect that they would come out a little bit flat, just given how tired they are and before they get their legs underneath them. And, you know, are they ripe for the picking, for the Jets to come out strong and, you know...
Yeah, absolutely, Drew. You know, the second half of back-to-back with travel we spoke about earlier, and Chip alluded to the fact that the team's pretty tired and Pomeroy's is trying to rest up. Again, this is a fast team and a good transition team. But you look at their defense, guys, and... You know, Pekkanen and Caberle and guys like that. Obviously, Timmy Gleason's a tough guy to get off the puck. But you can work this team underneath the hash marks again. And I'm stressing that especially because they're going to be tired. And you want to make them work and you want to make them defend, Ezzy. On the rush, we talk about it again. On the rush, sure, that helps. But they get the puck, they move it right back out, and they're on the offense. You have to be able to make this team defend. They're not the biggest team.
but they're fast. So you make them work behind the hash marks. You make a guy like Cabrelle defend on the boards, and he's not good defending on the boards, and he's not great at putting himself in front of the net and clearing out the front of the net. So there's room to move there, and you have to take advantage of that. And if you don't, their transition game and their ability to beat you with speed and a strong attack is going to hurt you.
Yeah, and the Carolina Hurricanes, like I mentioned in the first hour, are a very good hockey team. And as far as I'm concerned, there are these distinct advantages that the Jets can capitalize on. But I also think that, we talk about raising expectations for the Jets as a whole on the season. As far as back-to-back games go, I think it can't be understated, but it also can't be overstated as far as what the impact that can have. As far as I'm concerned, they got outplayed. The Blues can be a physical team. And
yeah, they can, for sure.
The Jets are definitely not.
Can we talk about that for a second, Ez? Yeah. I mean, you watch these games. Can somebody throw a hit out there?
You know, they've been...
Can somebody throw a hit?
In that Ottawa game, I don't think there was any physical contact at all. The game of shinning.
And I watched it over again, and there's a lot of turning away from it. Can somebody throw a hit?
As far as I'm concerned, Richie, you've got... we'll start with the forwards here. The GST line, Glass, Slater, and Thorburn, is a physical line.
They missed Slater, but yeah.
Slater's out, but
it is a physical
Stapleton
line.
Comes in. That's a line. But when you look at Ladd, Little, Wheeler, you've got Ladd is physical, but that's about it.
Yeah, but he's more physical like along the boards. He's not going to nail a guy. I mean, aside from Bogosian and Buffon, who really laid a couple of big hits in the Toronto game, this team really doesn't have many guys thrown around the body.
Go all the way through the lineup. Antropov,
nope.
Burmistrov,
nope.
And Wellwood. Nope. The most physical guy in that line is Burmistrov.
Yeah.
And then you go Shifley, McLean, both not physical players at all. So as far as I'm concerned, setting the tone on forward is not going to happen. You've basically got Mark Stewart and Big Buff on defense.
Yeah, Buff. This actually brings me back to, and I know we'll talk about this later, it brings me back to the Anthony Stewart factor. Mm-hmm. I mean, you look at some of the guys they're icing out there right now. There's no room for him. Like there was no room for him. Like he was going to cost you maybe 1.2, 1.3, and I wrote all the articles about it. Even if it's 1.5, when you're bringing in Brett McLean, sure, I like the experiment. Why not? Hasn't worked so far. But I think you need to, I think the thing we need to go over is the fact that a guy like McLean, right? A guy like McLean, now so Carolina gave him an extended deal, but a guy like McLean is making $735,000, okay? Wellwood making $700,000, Stapleton $525,000. But McLean's making $735,000. You picked him up off waivers, okay? And you look at Anthony Stewart in Carolina. Again, I know that they gave him a two-year contract, but even so, he's making $900,000 for 2 years. I'm not saying he would have signed for that here. He probably wouldn't have. But
he also wouldn't have signed for $2 million.
Even if he signed for 1.5, like you said, 1.5 is nothing.
No, it wouldn't even been that much. Yeah, it would have been like, you know, like,
there has to have been something.
I'll go back to the article, but
it would have been 1.2.
It just, okay, there's certainly, to me, not a $150,000 difference, and that's so insignificant in the big realm of things that it's just odd to me. And size, and also true size, and he can be physical.
Yeah, physicality.
And look at it in the aspect of this roster right now. They are, you know, Fair has a bum shoulder, if not two bum shoulders. And they got Wheeler on the right side there, okay? They're playing Wellwood there right now. Stapleton last game and Thorburn. You couldn't use him on the right side? Like, that right side's pretty weak, guys. Probably, you know, that's probably the weakest spot on their roster right now.
Yep.
Without Fair, and we don't know when he's going to come back, if he's going to come back. Without Fair, like, that is the weakest spot in their roster, in my opinion. And they could use a guy like that. I'm not saying he'd make the difference between the playoffs or not, but he certainly would be a positive influence as opposed to a negative. Now, maybe there are some things on the side off the rink that we don't know about, but
it didn't keep Carolina from shy. I mean, Carolina didn't shy away from him.
No.
I mean, and that's sort of what we've speculated, what the scuttlebutt has been, because you know he's had some troubles in juniors and everything else, and there's, you know, sort of was the talk that maybe there's a problem in the dressing room.
Sure,
but we don't know of anything, and nobody said anything. And you need, this is a team that is not does not have a ton of NHL talent.
Drew, I would bet
with all due respect to Brett McLean, I'm not sure that he's an NHL talent at this point.
I would bet money that Carolina was not the only team interested in Anthony Stewart.
But they gave a 2-year deal. That's why.
Why did the Jets drop him for nothing?
That's a question that we don't have the answer to, aside from maybe some rumors that we've heard. Do we have time to get into some of the options looking ahead for the Jets as far as...
Well, you know, before we... We've got to go to break. But on the other side of break, On the other side of break, I want to talk about Blake Wheeler.
What about him?
I want to talk about why isn't he more physical? Why isn't he playing? He's a big guy. He had one charge deep into the net. Why isn't he doing more in the corners? I want to talk about Evander Kane. Why aren't the Jets playing him the ice time he needs?
There's a lot
of questions about this team that have not been answered, and we're going to try and answer them on the other side of this break. You're listening to Santa Lucia Pizza Game Day on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. The previous segment was brought to you by the Cheer Bar and Grill, located in the heart of Osborne Village at Stradbrook and Osborne. Catch all the home team's games on their numerous HD big screens. Be sure to join Illegal Curve Hockey for their weekly appearances at the Cheer Bar and Grill.
Drew could eat.
Drew, you know why?
You're actually getting in trouble, Richard.
What?
Uh-oh. You're getting in trouble with my mom.
Why?
You made disparaging remarks about her husband. She's not happy. She's going to cut you.
I'm actually excited to hang out with Sheldon. Like when you're in bed at 9:30 on the Friday of the trip, me and Sheldon will be out partying.
Yeah.
Sheldon and I, sorry.
It's funny you mentioned that Sheldon and I, because she also told me to tell Ezra that the proper English is yeah. so-and-so and
I
not
corrected
me
myself.
And so-and-so.
No, that's what Richie's mom texted me that, too.
You're texting with my mom is a whole other
story. Nothing I do is proper, so I don't know why anyone is expecting my English
to
be proper. You're
not even wearing a shirt right now.
No, it's actually better that he is wearing a shirt. It's just got a big picture of meat on it for some reason.
Actually, between the break, Drew ate your shirt. That's why you're not wearing a shirt.
Today is going to be a fantastic day. 45,000 people watching the Bombers and Jets. And Drew and I are going to get popcorn from the stadium and the arena, which is pretty significant.
You see, factually untrue because I don't like popcorn. Not a big popcorn guy.
You seem to like the MTS Center Fair.
I don't eat the popcorn there. We leave that to Michael Remus.
I've seen you
Michael Remus of Illegal Curve is the big popcorn guy. Speaking of Michael Remus, he's down at MTS Center. The Jets are doing their game day skate, and he sent us over the following... This isn't confirmed, but it seems to be the following line combinations for tonight's game. You have Ladd, who's going to be in the lineup, in case you were curious about that. You have Ladd, Little, and Wellwood playing together. Looks like you have Burmistrov, Antropov, and Wheeler playing together.
Yep.
Kane, the returning Ben Maxwell,
yep.
and Mark Scheifele playing together.
The return of the Max.
And, of course, the GST line is still together, that being Glass. I'm not sure if it's going to be Slater or Stapleton today.
I think Slater is back.
Slater. He had a flu bug. So Glass, Slater, and Thorburn will be playing together, the GST line, as dubbed by Legal Curve's own Ezra Ginsberg.
And Jay Richardson.
I'll give credit to Jay. Of course.
My boy Jay. Let's not forget about him.
That's right. Defensive pairings, looks relatively straightforward as normal. Bufflin and Enstrom, Stewart and Bogosian. And Oduya and Jones, by the looks of it, maybe yeah. Derek Meach is the odd man out tonight.
Could see that.
Yeah, I think that seems to be the case. So
sure, I know we're
going to Let's talk about Ben Maxwell.
Okay.
What does he bring to the lineup? He's going to make his season debut for the Jets by all accounts tonight.
He's a nifty player. Needs to prove that he's not a tweener. Either a top six forward or a productive bottom six.
Not
forward.
Like a tweener like Justin Bieber.
Yeah, are you a scorer? Or are you a bottom six player and you are more of a checking role and then differentiate yourself between the third and second line? Or are you a fourth liner or a fringe player? He's got talent, guys, and he's got skill, and he's an upgrade over maybe what they had there before. That third line still leaves a ton to be desired, and I'm still wondering why the heck they are putting Evander Kane on the third line. They're isolating him in his minutes. I don't understand it. He's playing far too little right now, and he'd arguably be the most talented forward. Another thing I'm really wondering about is now I realize that Kane's a left winger, but Kyle Well was just getting so much play. And don't get me wrong, I realize what he brings to the table, but long term he doesn't bring anything to the table for this team. Short term he's a nifty player, he can make nice passes, but somewhat odd to me that a guy, Ladd likes to control the puck below the hash marks a bit, and Little trying to find his way, likes to create up the rush a bit. I realize Ladd's a scorer in that line, but Little doesn't have a bad shot when he's got the puck and he's moving with it. But he doesn't have the quickest shot, a pass from the corner. And then Wellwood has a terrible shot. So if Ladd's controlling the puck and he puts it out in front, how are they going to generate that offense in terms of, sustained pressure? I wonder that. I am intrigued though by the Wheeler playing with Antropov and Burmistrov, in that Burmistrov can skate. Wheeler can skate. Antropov isn't the best. Is obviously isn't a great skater, but it's a nice mix there of speed and skill and passing and shooting. And Wheeler's a shooter. You're putting him with Andropov and Burmistrov, who you could probably argue both are pass-first players. I think that could be an interesting lineup. I will look for Wheeler to get off the Schneid tonight. But Scheifele needs to go down.
Go down, you mean back to Barry?
Back to Barry.
There's no question about that. If there's no question about it in your mind, what are they waiting for?
I don't think giving him the nine games, but I mean, I would send him back right away. I don't mind him giving the nine games, but I just think if he, even if he scored 10 goals, I'd send him back.
He won't.
But Kane's ice time needs to be rectified. I mean, this is...
Well, let's talk about Kane's ice time. Let's talk about it. Why? What would be... I mean, you're Claude Noel. Why isn't Evander Kane playing more?
I don't know. I don't know. I'm not sure if it's an attitude thing. I'm not sure if it's an off-ice thing. Because he's on the ice. I mean, he's back-checking hard. He's working hard. He's drawing penalties. An underrated aspect of his game. And he did that last year as well. He brings a lot of positive attributes to the table, and he brings a high-end skill that this team doesn't have for the most part.
You know, we watch the games, and every time it seems like he's on the ice, and it's only been very limited minutes, about 10 minutes a game, 10, 11 minutes a game. It seems like he does something where they at least generate a borderline scoring opportunity. And this is playing with talent that is far below, you know, what I consider to be NHL talent at this point. This is, I mean, he was playing with, you know, Kane and, with McLean and Scheifele.
Yeah, right.
So anything that he's generating on that line right now seems to be a product of him really going one-on-three in terms of against the other team's forwards.
And, Drew, anyone could pick up a newspaper and see that Evander Kane, he's missed one game. Anyone can see that he has no points. It's clear that he's struggled offensively.
But you're playing...
But hold on.
Okay.
But the top line has struggled offensively. You've got Brian Little with 1 point. You've got Andrew Ladd with 1 or 2 points. You've got Blake. I believe between the three of them, they have 3 or 4 points.
Little's got a point. Wheeler, I don't think has anything.
You're not exactly putting out anyone who's got the hot hand now. And as far as I'm concerned, he's.
And I don't.
Hold on. This is just my personal opinion. I think he is in Claude Noel's doghouse.
But why?
My personal opinion, for whatever reason, and it's unfortunate because. For the Jets to have the type of success that they need to get into the playoffs, he's one guy that it's not possible for the Jets to be good if Evander Kane doesn't take a step forward offensively. It just isn't possible.
This is a guy you're expecting.
Now, one thing is, his ice time was like 10, 11, 12, you know, around there. He played 16 last game, which we need to account for. But
he's not playing with any talent, though.
Right. And well, he moved on. Now, let's talk about how they moved him on to the first line. They moved Ladd on with Andropov. They already changed that. They moved Ladd on with Andropov and Burmistrov for the third period.
Yeah.
And then they moved Kane up with Little and Wheeler.
Part of that might have been a function of Andrew Ladd eating a puck, though.
Right. No, but then he came back and he played in different lines.
Yeah.
Kane needs to be getting even over 16 minutes a game, and he needs to be getting 18 and a half minutes, in my opinion, based on what he's done in the past 2 years. He's improved on many aspects of his game. And I also have to say that I think Claude Noel, some people were getting on him, I think on the post-game show, about changing the lines too much. I don't mind that at all. Nothing's happening right now. I like a change. Don't continue with the same group. Who knows if they're going to be
successful or not. Why would you keep the same group if nothing's working?
Right. So I think that it's absolutely the right move to make.
I mean, I have no problem with that.
I don't know why Well was getting so much ice time, though. Now, he got 12 minutes last game, and he was moved around a bit. But I'm talking about, when I say ice time, I mean ice time with the best players.
Right. Why isn't Kane... I mean, are they trying to make the... I mean, well, Kane, I can see
Kane,
that...
Wellwood can play right, and Kane plays left.
I can see that if that third line... I mean, if you don't have Kane on that third line, so you have a third line of Scheifele and Maxwell tonight and question mark. You know, anybody that they move around.
Got to play skill with skill, Drew.
I mean, are they trying to make that third line not the worst hockey in
first of all,
worst third line in hockey?
Let's call it what it is. That's a fourth line.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's not, though. I mean...
It is, though.
But the ice time-wise, it hasn't been.
It is. McLean played 4 minutes last game.
Well, McLean is not an NHL player right now. He's not. He's invisible every time he's
12,
on the ice.
Scheifele played 12, but Thorburn played, 7 minutes. So, I mean, it depends on whether Slater's there or not. But, yeah, they play... Well, Scheifele also gets power play, some power play time. So, it goes both ways. I don't know.
But that third... Like, I mean... If you want Evander Kane to be one of your... top line.
He
needs
to play over 18 and a half minutes a game, Drew.
And he has to play with talent. You know,
that's the whole point. You're playing
with one hand tied behind his back because he's playing with guys who really shouldn't be in the NHL right now. with all due respect to Scheifele and Brett McLean, who might end up having fabulous NHL careers.
But he's
right now they're not there,
and he's not there.
Evander Kane could be there. He can be a very productive NHL player right now. Scheifele and McLean aren't there yet.
And I don't think you're going to get any disagreements with us. And
now today it'll be interesting because Ben Maxwell, at least you know, is a bona fide NHLer.
Do I?
Well, you were just talking about is he a top six guy or a bottom six?
Well, he's also young and has only had, I believe, 50 NHL games.
If you're not a second liner or a third liner, are you a fourth liner? And then are you just a 13th forward? That's what I was getting at, Drew.
Yep.
That's the question. But I think overall, you're right. I mean, let's go over Kane's game by game ice time. 10:34 the first game, 14:43 the second, 13:30 the third, didn't play the fourth, and 11:48 in the fifth, and then about 16 minutes in the sixth. So obviously that last game saw a little bit of an increase, but at the end of the day, it's probably averaging about 12 and a half, 13 minutes. Not enough. I mean, Kyle Wellwood's playing 12, 16, 15, 17, 15, and I think 11 or 12 last game. Again, all due respect to him, and he does some good things, but you have to find that ice time for Kane. You have to get him the ice time.
And Richie, I think we're all in agreement that Kane is an unbelievable talent, you know, drafted very high in the first round in his third year in the NHL and all that, and we're all in agreement that his ice time should be higher. As far as I'm concerned, Kane, to me, I look at the Jets' special teams in addition to their overall play, and it hasn't been good. They've scored one goal on the power play. It's been awful. Their penalty killing's been awful. Evander Kane's not getting any time on the penalty kill. You're throwing Andrew Ladd and Brian Little out there, and then you've got Tanner Glass and Jim Slater on the second penalty kill.
Isn't very good either right now.
And as far as I'm concerned, on the power play, he has to play with a setup man. And you've got Little and you've got Antropov as your setup man. But Kane, it almost feels like they're having trouble deciding who that one player should be, what center should play with Kane. And it's obviously not happening on the second line with Little or Antropov. And the question is, there only is two centers that he can play with unless you're burying him on the third line. And that's a huge dilemma right now. Yeah, he has to get the ice time. I'm in 100% agreement. But until they acknowledge that he should be on the top two lines, how's it going to happen? I don't see it. I think there's a huge problem that they're going to have to address because Evander Kane is your most talented player on forward. He just is. I don't think you can argue with that.
But are you telling? I mean, Burmistrov has had the opportunity to shine this year, and he has done so. Well, relatively speaking, he's playing well.
He's played better.
Are you telling me if Kane hasn't had that same opportunity, he wouldn't be playing that well? Also,
I don't know if he would or wouldn't. I mean,
it's hard to say, but it's definitely a good possibility.
He needs more of an opportunity. Yes.
He needs more of an, and it just doesn't make any sense why he's not having that opportunity. That's the point.
It's odd.
It is odd, and we'll see tonight if it changes as they're shuffling the lines around.
Yep.
For the first time,
Scheifele in the lines.
Yeah. For the first real time this year, they're Noel's, you know, changing things around to start the game.
I like the Wheeler move there.
You like the Wheeler on second line there?
You got to get him going.
Well, let's go to break.
It's going to be a big line. A couple of six foot fivers.
Theory, and again, you can, it's not a tangible thing in chemistry, but in theory, I really do like the mix there of speed, shooting, and ability to sustain.
You got two big guys on that line with Wheeler and Antropov.
Yeah, and Antropov is better on the boards, I think, than Wheeler.
Well, and that's what I meant to do with this segment, but I got distracted. Next segment, I want to ask, why isn't Blake Wheeler doing more along the boards? Let's go to break. You're listening to Santa Lucia Pizza Game Day on TSN 1290.